turn it over to Uncle Jim on the deadly challenges of social media.
Well, thanks, Brother Ben, and good evening, brethren and sisters, and young people and friends. Sorry for bringing you out one night earlier than what you would normally come out during the week. It's not particularly warm out there, is it? But it hasn't been above freezing since I've been in Canada, so I don't expect very much. Well, brothers and sisters, we come tonight to consider the challenge of social media and technology. I'm going to include both of those things in this talk, because I think all of us recognise, we probably recognise, that this is one of the great challenges for latter-day Christadelphians. I never expected to be here in 2019, and most of you didn't either, but one of the great challenges of our times is the way that technology has completely taken over our world and dominating the lives of people, especially our younger people. We want to talk about that tonight. Now, when I was a child, of course, I used to read comics. And one of the comics that we were reading was Chester Gould's comic about Dick Tracy, the detective. And, of course, he had a marvellous gadget on his wrist. It was a two-way radio. We thought that, as children, was just unbelievable. It was science fiction, that it would never, ever be a reality. Well, of course, we know that it is a reality. Unbelievable technology has become a reality within a generation. And, of course, Dick Tracy's wristwatch come two-way radio is like a dinosaur in the technology world today. So it's just amazing what has happened. You know, he had this wristwatch. He could speak into it and communicate with someone else, because he had to say out. Or over, and then someone else would talk. Well, now we've got these gadgets. I can talk to my wife face-to-face on the other side of the world with great clarity. It's unbelievable, isn't it? So I ask these questions. Is the world a safer and better place as a result of this, do you think? Is society producing a better connected, caring and compassionate community thereby? Well, I think I can see the heads nodding, or at least being shaken, because we know that it isn't. We want to explore why that's the case tonight. Now, the effect of modern technology on our world is there for everyone to see. In 2011, when the Arab Spring began, it was technology, it was social media, that undid many rulers in the Middle East, and one of those was Muammar Gaddafi. You remember him? The dictator of Libya. Now, of course, God wanted him out of the way, because what's happening now is perfectly in harmony with Ezekiel 38 and verses 5 and 6. But he was overthrown because of the effectiveness of social media. People could talk to each other. They could send messages about what was happening, where he was or where his people might be. And so they were able to catch up with him eventually and put him to death. So a lot of governments, including the Syrian government, suffered because of the brilliance of modern technologies. And you can see that a lot of countries there are still affected today by those events. Now, tonight I'm going to use the chapter that Ben read for us, Ecclesiastes chapter 7. I'm not going to give you an exposition of it. That's not the purpose of this. I'm just going to use some of the passages that we've read out of Ecclesiastes chapter 7. So here's one, verse 29, the last verse of this chapter. Lo, this only have I found, that God hath made man upright, but they have sought out many inventions. That's so true, isn't it? There's never been a time in human history when there's been more inventions that man is using, and gadgetry has filled up our world to an extent that we've hardly got time to do anything else but play with gadgets. Isn't that true? That's what we do. We play with gadgets, and they've come to dominate our life. Now, here's what smartphones can do, for example. They're better than a two-way radio. They're genuine two-way communication. They are a mini mobile computer. They've got more power. Just this little gadget in your hand's got more power than the huge computers that they were building in the 1960s. Filled up a room bigger than this. Okay? Now we've got it in our hand. They can access the internet without restriction, hints, email, tweets, and a plethora of other apps, as they call them, provide unlimited capacity for on-the-go communication. GPS maps and tracking of other people's mobile devices is also possible. This is a boon, of course, for concerned parents who want to know where their child is, but it can be a deadly weapon for others. And the title of this talk was the Deadly Challenge, and it is deadly. I want to turn for a few minutes to what's happening in the society around us, just to see what this kind of technology is doing in society. And don't think, brothers and sisters and young people, that this is not touching us in our community, because I know it is. I know some very tragic cases, which I'm not going to tell you about because it's not important. But there are tragic cases that have happened in our community, and this was one in the world. This building is a memorial. You see all the flowers here? This is a memorial near Seattle for five children who were murdered by their father, who then killed himself after tracking his wife by cell phone. So she lived, but she lived with this disaster of having lost her five children. Now, some domestic violence shelters in the United States have learned from that experience. As soon as victims arrive at shelters run by an organisation called A Safe Place, we literally take their phones apart and put them in a plastic bag to disable the tracking system so that people can't be tracked by the GPS module on their phone. In Australia, we've got the same problem as everywhere else. Now, this goes back a few years to 2011, but I thought this gentleman's comments were very relevant. This is Detective Sergeant Iddles of the Victorian Police, and he was at a conference, and he said, "Social media is killing us." The rise of social media, said the article in the paper, has been slammed as a factor contributing to murders and suicides. Detective Sergeant, Senior Sergeant Rod Iddles told Sunday's Murder Investigation Forum at the Mildura Club, "A lack of face-to-face communication had led to some people's feelings of isolation and loss of reality." Well, I don't think he's too far off the mark. And that's what's happened, brothers and sisters and young people in our society. He went on to say this, "Sergeant Iddles urged people to step away from social media and actually start to speak to people instead of being selfish. The social fabric of our society has broken down. We have lost the art of communication. Communication now is either by Twitter, by Facebook, by text, by email. We have lost the art of sitting down and speaking to people." I think we would agree with him. And that's, of course, some 8 years ago that he was making these comments. Well, it's got a lot worse since then, as we know. Now, have a look at some of the sad cases that have occurred in the world around us. The sad end of this flirtatious student, Phoebe Prince. She hung herself, this 15-year-old, on the 14th of January 2010 because of social media. There was threats being made in the schoolyard and on social media, and she decided she'd had enough. She endured 3 months of it, and she went and hung herself because of that cyberbullying. Ecclesiastes 7, verses 25 to 26 said this, "I applied mine heart to know and to search and to seek out wisdom and the reason of things and to know the wickedness of folly, even of foolishness and madness. And I find more bitter than death," which you notice these words, "more bitter than death, the woman whose heart is snares and nets and her hands as bands. Whoso pleaseth God shall escape from her, but the sinner shall be taken by her." This is a case of a murder which stemmed from a Facebook feud. This is the story. Love triangles often result in some seriously unfavourable results. Take, for instance, Tori Lynn Emery, 23, and Alicia Abernathy, 21. The two women fought over the same man via Facebook until a high-speed chase ended in murder. According to reports, Tori ran into Alicia at a McDonald's and was so worked up she followed her car and aggressively rammed her vehicle until Alicia was killed. As if the incident couldn't be any more shocking, Tori did all this while her three-year-old was in the back seat. Oh, and the man they were both pursuing was actually in prison. You got an idea of the stupidity, absolute stupidity of people when it comes to their use of social media. Ecclesiastes 7, verses 21 and 22 said this, "Also take no heed unto all words that are spoken, lest thou hear thy servant curse thee. For oftentimes also thine own heart knoweth that thou thyself likewise hast cursed others." Well, they've got a pretty good piece of equipment now to curse, haven't they? Extremely good piece of equipment. And this young lady was 14 when she committed suicide by hanging herself 3 weeks before her 14th birthday. And of course, there were people charged over this and the charges were ultimately withdrawn, but she was on MySpace and that particular platform was being used for cyberbullying. Just another case. Have a look at this young fellow. Welcome home, Dad. Teen kills dad after being banned from using MySpace. Ecclesiastes 7 verse 9 says, "Be not hasty in thy spirit to be angry, for anger resteth in the bosom of fools." So this young fellow, 15-year-old Houston Schickler, or Slicker, began posting his suicidal thoughts on MySpace. His parents decided that it would be best if his internet privileges were taken away. Yet what they didn't know was that their son would literally kill to share his thoughts with the world. Slicker stayed home from school during his MySpace punishment and waited for his dad to return home from work. Though he claims his initial plan was to take his own life, he shot his father as he walked through the door. Now that kind of thing's happening all over. Just a couple more. In fact, one or two more. The deadly evidence is there. A job interview of this 18-year-old came to a sad end. She was on Facebook. She was lured into a place, a private place, because she wanted to look after animals, and this fellow was saying he had some sort of business with animals, and he killed her. And so the comment in the yellow there is important. It's an area where predators and perverts and other people just get onto. You just don't know who you could be talking to, and this young lady didn't know who she was talking to. This Nigerian girl also was lured into a vehicle to take a journey from which she did not return. She was murdered by the individuals who had lured her. There are thousands of cases like that, brothers and sisters and young people, of the misuse of social media. Abuse and insult, of course, is common. Rumour mongering, bullying, stalking, threats of harm, lewd and repulsive image attacks, revenge campaigns, and so on. It's all part of the world in which we find ourselves today. And it is affecting Christadelphia. No question about that. So we need to reflect upon this. Where are we up to in this? What's the problem here? What do we need to be aware of? What can we do about it? We want to see if we can address some of those questions here tonight. You remember Sergeant Idle's reference to a lack of communication? This is what he said. "We have lost the art of communication. We have lost the art of sitting down and speaking to people." Now, we've all observed, sitting across from each other, people in restaurants or fast food outlets or somewhere else, not talking to each other, but using their phones. And I've heard some cases where they're actually texting each other across the table. Really? And that's what's happened. Now that these gadgets are dominating our life, there are people who've lost the art of being able to speak to anyone. They've actually got to use their fingers to tap out a message on Twitter or whatever it may be. Ridiculous, isn't it? But are not Facebook, Twitter, MySpace and the other social media platforms supposed to be all about communication? Well, it's not the kind of communication that's producing good results. So what's the problem, do you think? What is the problem with this? Well, just last December in Brisbane, the Sunday Mail newspaper had an extensive article on the problem of technology and social media. They called it the device age. And this headline was, "Game of violence as teens hit out. Son threatens mother with a knife." And these were some of the snippets that we took from that article. Online gaming is turning teenage boys into violent thugs, forcing families to take out domestic violence orders against their sons. One Queensland father had to be hospitalised after his internet-addicted son punched him in the face for turning off an online game. Yeah, interesting. "Parents are afraid of their children," he told the Sunday Mail yesterday. "Kids are literally assaulting their dads when they turn the game off at night. Some heavy gamers soiled themselves playing games. They wouldn't even go to the bathroom. They were that addicted to it. They refused to go to school. They suffered depression or had trouble concentrating. The introduction of smartphones and iPads over the past decade has coincided with a doubling in cases of autism." Did you know that? "While prescriptions to treat attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD as we know it, have grown by nearly one third." Yeah, you see, it's having actually palpable results on the human race. Australian occupational therapist Yvonne Wink yesterday said children were suffering separation anxiety because of a lack of face time with parents. "And they were throwing tantrums to get parental attention." Mrs. Wink said devices were mushing children's brains and interfering with motor skills. "They're so used to swiping, they can't turn the pages of a book or hold a pencil." Really? So all they know to do is to swipe, see? So they've forgotten, at least they've never learned how to turn the page of a book. We have really got very low, haven't we, if that's the state of things. "They get frustrated really easily. They don't have social problem-solving skills, and looking someone in the eye is becoming rare." Have you noticed that? No one wants to look you in the eye anymore. Queensland Brain Institute researcher Dr. James Kesby said many online games triggered hits of dopamine. We're going to talk about dopamine. "They're copying casinos and gambling games," he said. "Dopamine is the key to keep players wanting to get that reward again and again." You aware of dopamine, brothers and sisters? Well, God created the human body, and it's there. We're going to talk about dopamine. Now, this is what this article said about the effect on the brain. Frontal lobe. One study claimed frequent players, this is game players, can get video game brain. That's what they call it. This means key parts of their frontal lobe become underused, which can alter moods. That's why they become very moody. Prefrontal cortex. So this arrow is right up here in the front. Games that require logical thinking activate this area, which controls decision making. They talk about the dorsal anterior cingulate cortex. And this, of course, is a little bit further back in the brain. Immediately after firing a weapon in a game, players show more activity in this area, which controls cognition and planning. So you see, they're actually, like that woman said, they're mushing their brains. It's actually having a physiological effect upon the material in the brain. So does dopamine. So what's dopamine? Dopamine plays a major role in the brain system that is responsible for reward-driven learning. Now, let me just ask you a question before I go on. I write a lot of emails, and I recognise that this happens because, you see, I'm waiting for a response to my emails. And I get a little bit disturbed if I don't get a response because I don't get a dopamine rush. You see, dopamine is a reward chemical in the brain. And it works across the whole spectrum of human life. This is why when you get involved in something that pleases the flesh, it's very difficult to get away from it. Because you just keep on, you want to keep getting the reward chemical running through the brain. That's how that works, see? So this is what dopamine does. Every type of reward that has been studied increases the level of dopamine transmission in the brain. And a variety of highly addictive drugs, including stimulants such as cocaine and methamphetamine, act directly on the dopamine system. There is evidence that people with extroverted, that is reward-seeking personality types, tend to show higher levels of dopamine activity than people with introverted personalities. So dopamine is an extremely important substance in our brains. It's that reward substance. So just check it out in future. When you send off a Twitter message, I don't use Twitter, Donald Trump does, but I don't. If you send off a message to someone and you're expecting a response, brothers and sisters, just test the way that your brain is actually working. Because it will. This dopamine is saying, come on, come on, come on, come on. I want a response, see? Because it's the reward is to get some sort of feedback, some sort of response. And that happens, I said, across the board of, in human life. So just check that one out. Particularly if you've got an addiction of any kind. You'll see it works with addictions. And we want to talk about addictions. But before I do, I want to talk about Facebook. Now, look, I've been accused of hating Facebook. That's just nonsense, brothers and sisters. But I don't use Facebook, and I never can. You know why I never can use Facebook and never will? Because I give these talks. And I say that I haven't got Facebook and I'm not going to get it, so I can't get it. See? I'm done. I'm finished. Because as soon as I do get it and send a Facebook message, you'll know that I've broken the promise, won't you? So I've put myself in irons, and I'm thankful for that. I've been meeting on this trip quite a number of people. You know, several of them have said to me, I used to be on Facebook, but I don't have an account anymore because they got burnt by it, or they saw too much rubbish on it. They saw things that they don't want to see or hear, and so they got off it. You make your own choice. Facebook is the most prominent social media service in the world today. It has billions of users around the world. Time magazine devoted its final issue in 2010 to Facebook, and its founder, who was chosen as the person of the year in that year. Now, I find what Time wrote about Facebook and other social media platforms extremely helpful, and so I'm going to pass some of it on to you. Now, this is better than me saying it, because if I say it, people say, oh, but that's just him. But if it's Time magazine, it might be a little bit different. People might say, oh, that's Time magazine. So sit up and take notice, brothers and sisters and young people, as to what they say about social media platforms. In 2018, the founder of Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, appeared before Congress and other parliamentary inquiries in Europe about the misuse of data collected by Facebook's captured data stored in its massive facilities. Now, you know, he's trying to sort that out, but there's no chance of sorting it out. The world now knows that Time was right back in 2010. So here he is. This is Mark Zuckerberg. Looks pretty young there, doesn't he? He's a squillionaire. I mean, he's probably got $15 billion in the bank. But he was appointed as Person of the Year. And this is what Time magazine said. Person of the Year is not and never has been an honour. You get nominated Person of the Year, they're not giving you an honour. They're recognising something. It is a recognition of the power of individuals to shape our world. And very few have shaped our world more than Mark Zuckerberg. This is what they said about giving him this title of Person of the Year. For connecting more than 500 million people, that's all they had in that time, and mapping the social relations among them, something that has never been done before, for changing how we all live our lives in ways that are innovative and even optimistic. Now, they talked about Facebook friends. Have you got any Facebook friends? They said that the average in 2010 was 150 Facebook friends. And the reason that there's numbers like that is that you can actually talk to people who don't speak your language. So when you type a message to someone in China in English, they receive it in Mandarin because Facebook does the work for you. It translates your language into their language. That's how that works, you see. And so you can multiply friends all over the world. No problem. Don't have to learn their language. But of course, it's a fallacy. The fallacy of Facebook friends. Facebook herds everybody, friends, co-workers, romantic partners, that guy who lived on your block but moved away after fifth grade, into the same big room. It smooshes, I love that word, it smooshes together your work self and your home self, your past self and your present self into a single generic extruded product. Sounds like making sausages, doesn't it? And that's what it's doing to the brain. That's what they're saying. It suspends the natural process by which old friends fall away over time, allowing them to build up endlessly, producing the social equivalent of liver failure. On Facebook, there is one kind of relationship, friendship, and you have it with everybody. Your friends with your spouse. Sorry about that. Pressed the wrong button. Let's see if we can get this back. It's got to recognise who I am. This is a gadget. Thought I'd give you something to laugh about. Come on, come on. Behave yourself. Gadget's going to get me. It's going to bring me down, I think, this gadget. So let's see if we can find out what this is doing. Let's try this. Yep, here we go. So, they make the point, don't they, that Facebook friends is really a fallacy. And you see, the problem with this is addiction. It's really about addiction. So let's give a definition of addiction. This is from Webster's Dictionary. A state of physiological, that is a function of an organism, that's like a physical thing in the body, or a psychological, that's to do with the mind, the brain, dependence on a substance, especially an illegal drug or one liable to have a damaging effect. But the second point they make is great interest in something to which a lot of time is devoted. So if this is dominating your life and your time, then it's essentially an addiction. So how can social media completely take over someone's life? Well, we just mentioned one thing. There is that brain chemical called dopamine that plays a huge role in building internet addiction. Now, we've all been, if we're honest with ourselves, victims of this to some degree. So it affects us all. We need to face up to that. But there's another form of addiction as well, which social media has brought out of people. And it's called the addiction of disclosure. This is what Time magazine said about it. But there is another danger, which is that instead of feeling forced to share, we won't be able to stop ourselves from sharing. That we will willingly, compulsively violate our own privacy. Relationships on Facebook have a seductive, addictive quality that can erode and even replace real-world relationships. Now, look, if I didn't see it was Time magazine, I would have thought that this was someone much wiser. Someone in the truth, much wiser. Because, you see, they have actually put their finger right on the problem here. Friendships multiply with gratifying speed, and the emotional stakes stay soothingly low. Where there isn't much privacy, there can't be much intimacy either. It's like an emotional Ponzi scheme, where you keep putting energy in and getting it back tenfold, even though the dividends start to feel a little fake. I think they're right on the mark again. Now, this is a case, one woman's addiction. An article published earlier this year in European Psychiatry presented the case of a woman who lost her job to a Facebook addiction. And the author suggested that it could become a diagnosable ailment. Well, I understand it is now a diagnosable ailment. You can go to your GP and say, look, I've got a Facebook addiction. And then they will actually give you a prescription to go away with some drug. Really? The woman in question couldn't even make it through an examination without checking Facebook on her phone. Well, of course, if you've got your phone in an examination, then they think you're cheating. So that's why she didn't get the job, lost the job. But it's also affecting marriages, seriously affecting marriages. According to the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers, 81% of its members have seen a rise in the number of divorce cases involving social networking. 66% cite Facebook as the primary source for online divorce evidence. And then a year later, we read this from this lady, Miranda Miller. She asked the question, ever flirted with someone other than your spouse in a Facebook chat? You had better hope your message records don't end up in the hands of a divorce lawyer because they can access even the ones you've deleted. I want to show you how they can do that. They can access what you've deleted. Facebook, of course, is also threatening the truth, brothers and sisters. It's being used currently by Christadelphians for many purposes. These are just a few. It's being used to publicise their reasons for voting in political elections. You might not have seen this in your country, I don't know, but we see it in Australia. Christadelphians publicly putting it out there that we should vote, and they're going to vote, and they're encouraging other Christadelphians to go and vote, clearly to influence them to do that. It's being used to push women's rights issues with a view to achieving equality for sisters in the leadership of the Brotherhood. It's being used to publish wrong doctrine and diverse prophetic interpretations. It's being used to confuse the world about what the Christadelphian community stands for. And, sadly, it's also being used to connect homosexuals in the community. Now, I really don't like talking about this, but I think we have to be aware. I looked it up when I heard, because I didn't believe it, and I found a Christadelphian homosexual website. Shortly thereafter, it was locked away, and you couldn't get into it. You had to have a code to get into it. But it's there, brothers and sisters. Make no mistake about that. Isn't that sad? You know, no wonder God called his own people in Isaiah chapter 1, Sodom and Gomorrah. No wonder. And it's happening to us, and social media has played a huge role in that sad development. So what does Facebook do, and other providers, what do they do with all this information that gets onto Facebook? Well, they never delete it. It's never deleted. That's why Mark Zuckerberg and his team are going around buying up buildings, mainly in America, you know, big companies that collapse, and they vacate a building. Facebook goes in and buys it. They buy that building to stack it with all of these servers because they need memory banks. They never delete anything that goes onto Facebook. That's why Time said Facebook has a richer, more intimate hoard of information about its citizens than any nation has ever had. And the US government sometimes comes knocking, subpoena in hand, looking to borrow some. And we want to talk about the implications of that. So what does Facebook do with all this stored data, along with all of their companions in this world? Ecclesiastes 7 verse 11 says, wisdom is good with an inheritance. But my comment is, but not if the inheritance is a Facebook record that is never erased. This was the Wall Street Journal investigation. And they said this, many of the most popular applications or apps on the social networking site Facebook Inc. have been transmitting identifying information, in effect providing access to people's names and in some cases their friends' names to dozens of advertising and internet tracking companies. Companies like Google, Yahoo, and Microsoft gather information by tracking your web surfing activity through small computer files called cookies or software programs installed on your computer by the websites you visit. Over time, this information says a lot about your interests. Companies then use the information to make other guesses and predictions about you, ranging from gender and age to marital status and creditworthiness. It's rarely a coincidence when you see web ads for products that match your interests. Ever notice that? Yeah, you get ads and you also get little prompts saying, look, you would really like this, because you see they've been following what you've been looking up on the internet. Now that is one of the things that they do. Ecclesiastes 7 verse 8 says this, better is the end of a thing than the beginning thereof. Nobody believes that, of course, but it is actually true. But not with Facebook, because it will not be, brothers and sisters, until Armageddon that those banks of data will be destroyed and no longer be accessible. Now, that's at least 10 years away if Christ comes tomorrow. So we've got another 10 years of this nonsense if Christ comes very soon. Every friend request you've ever received and how you responded is kept. It's never deleted. Every poke, they call it a nudge, every poke or nudge you've exchanged, every event you've been invited to through Facebook and how you responded to the invitation. The IP address used each and every time you've logged into Facebook. They know exactly where you were. Dates of username changes and historical privacy settings changes. Camera metadata, including timestamps and latitude, longitude of pictures, picture location, as well as tags from photos, even if you've untagged yourself. That's all kept. It's all there, on file. Credit card information if you've ever purchased credits or advertising on Facebook. Your last known physical location with latitude, longitude, time, date, altitude, and more. They even know if you're in a plane. The report notes that they are unsure how Facebook collects this data, but they do collect it, and it's never deleted. So what's the implications of that, do you think, for us? Well, for everyone, but for us in particular. You're looking for a job? Many employers now routinely check the Facebook page of job applicants. Ecclesiastes 7 verse 1 says, "A good name is better than precious ointment." And your name might be besmirched by your Facebook account. By so doing, they can ascertain what your real interests in life are, what kind of friends you keep, what type of personality you are, your ambitions in life, indications of attitude and character. They can pick that up from your Facebook account. And you know what? I was told recently by a brother who got a new job in the American government. And when they were interviewing him, towards the end of the interview, they said, we need to advise you that we're going to check out your social media accounts. And he replied, "I don't have any." And they said, "Well, we'll still check them out." So there's very few organisations today, if they have any brains at all, that won't be looking at your Facebook account or some other social media platform that you may use. They will be typing in your name. And they have access, apparently, to information that the ordinary man in the street doesn't have access to. I don't know how that works, but that's what they're saying. If you do not hear from an employer, there's every possibility that your Facebook details have played some part. What about a national service call-up? What if America... Well, no, this, are we in Canada now? I think we are, yes. Okay, what if in Canada, Canada declared war against Quebec? Now, I shouldn't say that, should I? Well, you know what I mean. Okay. So if there was a war in and Canada was involved in it, like in Australia, brothers and sisters and young people, especially young people, there would be a call-up, wouldn't there? Everybody, male and female nowadays, no discrepancy now, you know, there's no difference between male and female because they'll call up everyone, 18 and above normally, to fight in that war. Now, I was called up to fight in Vietnam in January 1969. A few months later, I was to be married. And I got a letter saying you have to report to this particular camp in Victoria on such and such a date. Because my name had been pulled out of a barrel with a number on it, the number 11 in January. So my birthday was 11th of January, so in I go. So I went to court. I applied for complete exemption from military service, both combatant and non-combatant, as my father had been given in 1944 in the Second World War. And I went to court. And the prosecutor entered that courtroom with a look on his face that he's going to tear me to shreds. And he set about that assiduously for the next couple of hours, to tear me to shreds, to demonstrate, one, I was a coward, two, I didn't really believe the things I said I believed, and three, I wasn't consistent in my way of life with what I said I believed. And they were dredging up things. Now, they didn't have this mechanism in those days. But my best friend, the young brother who was my best man at my wedding, he was absolutely drilled for 8 hours because they had dug up some stuff on him. His father wasn't in the truth. They dug up some stuff on him. That's what they'll do. If you've been on Facebook, they know all about you. They'll dig up everything they can about you, and it will be brought out in court to test whether or not you are a genuine Christadelphian. Now that is a very strong reason, I think, to think seriously about what we put on social media, for a start. Use it, but use it wisely. What you put on there could well be disastrous for you in the future. For example, if you're a young brother and you love hunting, there's nothing wrong with hunting. I don't go hunting, but there's nothing wrong with hunting. But you put on there, you've got this M16 rifle and you fill a deer full of holes. That's going to come out in court. You know the best thing that could happen, brothers and sisters, to Christadelphia today is for Canada to go to war. Because our young people would have to stand up and be counted for what they really believe. They'd have to prepare themselves like I had to prepare myself as a 20-year-old to stand before a judge. That's the best thing that could happen to you. Sadly, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. We'll be taken away just before the Great Depression that's coming does its work on this world. And there'll be a lot of conflicts and stuff going on after that, but we'll be taken away to Sinai. I wish it would happen. You would seek exemption from military service, non-combatant and combatant. The court case would require you to defend what you have said and done in the past against your claims of being a conscientious objector. And government prosecutors would carefully examine social media data for clues to inconsistency. Time magazine said this. It warned of distortion. We are running our social lives over the internet, an infrastructure that was not designed for that purpose. And we must be aware of the distortions it creates, or we will be distorted by them. Probably the smartest thing they said in the entire article. Now, let's just consider some strategies as to what we might be able to do about this. You may not, in fact, need a Facebook intervention. Just a reality check. Be aware of the time spent using social media and ask, is this really what I want to be doing with my time? Now, it wouldn't be a bad idea to note down the time that you spend, half an hour or 2 hours on Facebook today. It'll start to add up over time. Ask honestly whether social media has displaced Bible reading and Bible study in your life. Now be honest with yourself. Has it replaced Bible reading and Bible study? And never ignore your conscience, because when I come to use these gadgets, I'm often conflicted. Because you see, they know how to appeal to human nature. Even on your news feed, have you ever noticed on your news, I don't have it showing on my screen for obvious reasons. Because I don't think I've ever seen one that down the bottom has a whole range of pictures, usually with two or three with half-clad ladies, well, I won't call them ladies, half-clad women. What are they doing? They want me to go in there and have a look. And the further you go in, the less clothing they're wearing. Isn't that not true? Yeah. They know how to appeal to human nature, brothers and sisters. And for the ladies, they put in all sorts of fashion stuff. Oh, I wouldn't mind getting a pair of shoes like that. And in you go. See? They are appealing to human nature. So be careful. Never ignore your conscience. Because when you do, you get into real strife. Limit friends to those who are genuinely so. And in most people, Facebook friends will come down to about 10%. Take breaks from using Facebook and tell your friends you are offline. You know why you should do that? Because then you can prove to yourself that it's not an addiction. Because if you're able to stop it for a couple of weeks and say, look, I'm going on holidays from Facebook, and you tell your Facebook friends, don't bother contacting me because I'm on holidays from Facebook. I won't be turning it up, won't be looking it up. And you can keep that for a couple of weeks or more, you know that you're not actually addicted. But if you can't, you are addicted. It's as simple as that. Strategies for parents. We ask this question, is the greatest enemy of modern parents technology in the hands of our children? I think it is. I think it is the greatest threat. Make sure you have effective controls on the devices your children use. You have to have some kind of internet filtering, something on your smartphone, the apps, etc., that could actually control what they can access. You see, children can walk around now with this little gadget, this smartphone in their hands, and they can see, providing on the internet, you go into McDonald's, you can get on the internet, they can see literally everything that's on the internet, unless there's some kind of control. Are you aware, brothers and sisters and young people, that fully 70, that's 70% of traffic on the World Wide Web is pornography? Did you know that? This is business traffic. This is all other traffic. 70% is pornography. I'm using a new gadget. I've had it for 2 or 3 days. I'm going to put on this gadget very soon something like K9, K as in the letter K, 9, which is a free web browser instrument that doesn't allow you to get into any bad site. All my other gadgets have got that on it. And I'll give you one guess. Who's got the password? My lovely wife, who's 12,000 miles away. And I never ask her for it, even though it frustrates me no end when I go into McDonald's and it won't let me get on the internet. Never mind. I'd rather be safe than sorry. If your children and teenagers have got these smartphones or any other gadget like an iPad or whatever it may be, and there's millions of them today, and you have not put, as parents, some kind of control on there that you manage, that they can't tamper with, I would suggest that that is unwisdom. It is unwisdom. You need to do something like that. And talk to your children over the meal table. That'll be a new experience. Face-to-face contact. Talk to your children over the meal table and the readings about the issues and challenges that they face and build a relationship of trust with them. Teach your children the principles of the truth. It is the only antidote in the end. You know, we are the most sorely tested generation in human history. And I mean that. No former generation has had to face what we face with the technology that we have. The apostle wrote this in Acts 14, just been stoned to death, virtually to death, confirming the souls of the disciples and exhorting them to continue in the faith, and that we must through much tribulation enter into the kingdom of God. Well, what tribulation do we have? Nobody persecutes us, brothers and sisters. Nobody's chasing us around to put us in prison because of our faith. What kind of tribulation do we have? These are they, says Revelation 7 verse 14, which came out of great tribulation and have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. Well, it just so happens that the word tribulation in both places is this word thlipsis. And it means pressure. Pressure. There's been no generation under as much pressure as we are. But it's not persecution of the kind that our brethren and sisters of the past had to face. It's a different kind. I want you to come with me to Luke chapter 17. Families who sit around the Word of God, brothers and sisters, and do the daily readings. Go back to the old way of doing things. You will have come across this passage twice in a year. It's the most relevant passage in Scripture for the final generation. Because it's Christ's own personal warning to us. He knew what was going to happen. Now we know, of course, he makes reference in verse 26 and 27 of the days of Noah and the days of Lot. We know what the character of those days was, and we're living in them. Then he says in verse 30, even thus shall it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. And in verse 31 he says, in that day he which shall be upon the housetop and his stuff in the house. So what was the housetop used for in Christ's times and before? Well, it used to have a place where you could go up onto the roof, and they had this balustrade around it. So normally there would be an outside set of steps, and you would come up the outside steps, you would get up onto the roof before you went into the house after coming in from the field of labour, and you would meditate and pray so that you might prepare for your obligations down below. Then you would come down and open the door and say, how are you, dear? And you'd be ready for the rest of the evening. And assemble your family around the word of God and do the things that were necessary. It was for prayer and meditation. You know what Christ is actually saying? He expects to find people like that. He actually expects to find Christadelphians who are reading and meditating and praying. But he warns, there's a danger. And his stuff in the house. Now the word stuff here is skuios. Skuos means implements, equipment, or apparatus. I like to add the word gadgets. You just ask yourself, brothers and sisters, when the call comes, can you imagine anybody coming down, as it were, from the rooftop of the house and putting their arms around a refrigerator and trying to, you know, sort of marshal it out of the house? Can you imagine that? It would be ridiculous, wouldn't it? Can you imagine people grabbing these and taking them off to Sinai? I can, because you can't do without it now. You have to have an operation to get it out of your hand. Isn't that true? In some people's lives, you have to have an operation to get it out of their hand. They can't go anywhere without it. That's the Lord telling us he knew exactly the pressure we would be under. So we need to think about that. Brothers and sisters, the day is coming when we will be taken to Sinai. And I want you to come with me, if you would, to Isaiah chapter 26 as we conclude this evening. We know that verse 19 is about the resurrection. And verse 20 is about the bridal chamber, for those who are accepted and immortalised in the bridal chamber with Christ. We know that the judgment seat from Exodus chapter 40 is 1 year. The duration of the judgment seat is 1 year. We know that the second year will fulfil Deuteronomy 24 verse 5. When a man takes a wife, he shall not be charged with any business. He shall not go to war. He will spend 12 months cheering up his wife. Of course, all you did that, didn't you, brethren? Is there a brother in this audience who, when he took his wife, didn't go to work for Pharaoh, was not charged with any business in the ecclesia, did no talks, no work in the ecclesia, but spent the whole 12 months cheering up his wife? Anybody? Of course there's nobody. Because nobody ever has. It wasn't designed for anybody else but one man. And that man's name is Jesus Christ. And he will do it. When he takes his bride, after 12 months of the judgment process, the next 12 months he's going to spend that time, 24 hours a day, going around and personally meeting every individual member of his bride. It's going to take him 12 months to do it. Expect a visitation. Now you want to know a bit more about you. He knows enough about you already, but he wants to know you face to face. And that's what will happen in that 12 months. There's 4.5 years of preparation, then we've got the 3.5 years before Armageddon, when work begins. When Elijah goes out, there's work to be done amongst the Arabs just before Armageddon. There's work to be done in Egypt, the smiting and healing of Egypt before Armageddon. A lot of things start to happen. And then we have Armageddon, of course. So that, brothers and sisters, is what's in front of us. So what's going to happen in that period between our being removed to the judgment seat and Armageddon? Well, Daniel chapter 12 tells us, doesn't it? Daniel chapter 12 verses 1 and 2 tells us, "Then shall stand up Michael, your prince, that great prince which stands for thy people," etc. And there will be, it says it twice in that little passage, at that time there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation on earth. And at that time, many that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake. So we know that the resurrection and the beginning of the time of trouble are concomitant events. They begin at the same time. And the world's going to still have its technology until Armageddon, because Armageddon will destroy it. But in that 10-year period, while we're at Sinai, brothers and sisters, the world will be carrying on. So here is our Lord Jesus Christ, Michael, the one who's like ale. The judgment seat will follow for 12 months, and then, as we pointed out, 12 months of rejoicing. While that's all happening, the world is in absolute turmoil. Absolute turmoil. So what part do you think might social media play in that time when we're at the judgment seat and the world is going through its time of trouble such as never was? Well, I was fascinated when someone gave me this particular photograph. I don't know anything about this movie. A young fellow gave me this photograph. It was to advertise on Netflix. That's where you can sort of, can you view movies or something on Netflix? Something like that. And this movie was called something ridiculous thing. Altered Carbon, I think it was called. Said something very interesting. When your rulers live forever, you have no choice but to join the resistance. Now, just think about this for a moment. Do people that live next door to you or that you work with know anything about your beliefs? They probably do. You've told them that Christ is coming. You might have told them, like I used to tell my work fellows, "I'm going to be gone. I'll be gone." Well, it didn't happen when I was working for Pharaoh. But it is going to happen. You know what they're going to do? A bit like the rebellion at the end of the 1,000 years, they're going to start contacting each other. They're going to use social media. That Christadelphian, what was his name? David something? Who told us about these things? You know, they think that they're going to be taken away and made immortal. And the messages will start to get around. Social media, I believe, will play a part. The confusion of the turmoil and the heartache that will overtake this world. A time of trouble such as never was, described by Christ as the time when men's hearts are failing them for fear. We think that's today. No, that's tomorrow. When men's hearts are failing them for fear. And Armageddon will deal with that problem. Brothers and sisters and young people and friends, social media has its uses if you use it wisely and if you're not addicted. And we're the only ones that can decide whether or not. That's our position.